messed up longer.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's Race Chat Live. Man, we are glad to be back on the air tonight. Unfortunately, Blog Talk Radio took a big dump on us last weekend, but last Tuesday night we had a big show planned. I've done a whole lot of homework. I got a whole lot of stuff prepared for the show, only to go to log in, and basically it was some mechanical errors, some technical difficulties. I hate even using that word after years and years of doing podcasts and knowing how hard this stuff really used to be. It just, you know, it's kind of just took the sail, the air right out of the sail. But we regrouped, we watched more racing, and we are here this Tuesday night to tell Mr. Jim, please give up the keys to NASCAR and give it to somebody who knows how to run a damn sport. Short track racing. Let's build more short tracks. Let's have more short tracks. Short track racing has to survive. Well, guess what? Short track racing was thriving. It was thriving in the Cup Series before the stinking Gen 7. The stinking Gen 7 was such a great idea by Mr. Jim France. He wanted to make sure that his IMSA damn drivers could come over. Not IMSA. IMSA. Never mind. IMSA drivers come out. I didn't want to say the wrong ones. Too many damn letters in racing. Anyway, now we have a car that has no fall off. Everybody runs the same damn lap times. It's just an absolute pathetic car. But hey, guess what? We're going to Texas this week, and this car drives amazing at mile and a half speedways. So, unfortunately, somewhere or another, we've got to fix short track racing, and I believe that Jim France is the culprit to all this and should resign immediately, handing the reins over to Lisa Kennedy and Ben Kennedy. Everything runs better when it's run by Kennedy. Outside of that rant, I really don't have much to rant about other than I'm glad to be on the air tonight, and I'm glad to have my partner and friend who's going to sit here and try to talk me off the ledge tonight because, first of all, I love Martinsville. I loved Friday night's race, and I loved Saturday night's race. That Xfinity Series gave us some of the best racing at Martinsville I've ever seen. Unfortunately, and when I say unfortunately, I mean unfortunately, I would have rather have combined the bad commentating of the Xfinity Series with the bad racing of the Cup Series, because the broadcast for the Xfinity race was just as damn terrible as the race itself on Sunday. Now, the racing, on the other hand, was quite spectacular. We saw passes. We saw wrecks. We saw a young man named Carson Kvapil make his debut in the number 88 machine. And by gosh, one thing that could be positive out of this week's show is if you like the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series, well, we're probably going to talk a lot about them because they put on a damn show for the fans where the Cup Series drivers were forced to parade around on some conveyor belt, okay? A conveyor belt. It was so bad that drivers were literally trying to wreck somebody and couldn't even get to their bumpers to do that to create a caution. That's supposed to be short track racing, but it's not what we're getting. Taz Taylor, are you ready to join me, my friend?
Oh, yeah.
Don't even get me started on the fact that the entire weekend was ruined because all they tried to do all weekend long, all day Sunday, was shove ruby red Hawaiian punch down my damn throat as Hendrick Motorsports goes and finishes 1-2-3. We might as well just hit the end button on the show. It's already shattered. It's going to be a disaster tonight, but we're glad to have y'all join us on the show, and we'll get down to the nitty-gritty. Taz Taylor, please unsour my attitude. Give me something to smile about once again, because, gosh, I'm trying to dig deep, and I just can't find it.
Oh, God. I don't even know, because, like, where I feel like the NASCAR officials, I feel like NASCAR officials screwed up on the calls for the race. Christopher Bell had, like, a broken tire and whatnot and didn't get a caution for limping around the track until he went to pit road. And caution didn't come out until, like, 15 seconds after he went on pit road, which is pretty BS in my opinion. But we'll call a caution for a flat tire limping around the track to force overtime. Something is a little fishy, I feel like.
Well, I mean, we were promised, a car that was going to make everybody on the same level playing field. Hendrick Motorsports has 4 wins. Joe Gibbs has 3 wins. 2 wins, and there's only, what, two other teams that have even had a win this year? I know we're early in the season.
I have – hold on. I got it. Hendrick has 4, Gibbs has 3, Trackhouse has 1. That's it so far.
That's it. Where's the parity at, man? You know? I mean, this car was supposed to bring – you know, a level playing field. Obviously, Hendrick has found something that others can't seem to find. It was even conspired that, you know, Hendrick was cheating, and that's how they were able to finish 1-2-3. This was, obviously a weekend for Hendrick, celebrating the 40-year anniversary. Look, I don't even want to come on the show and spend the whole show talking about Hendrick Motorsports. I'd rather talk about Truck Series and Xfinity Series, because literally, I don't know how we earn a single fan out here on this radio podcast talking about the dominance of Hendrick Motorsports. And I mean, it's the same reason why Formula One was such a great idea there for a couple of weeks, and then we've watched a guy win like 27 out of 30 races. There's nothing fun to talk about when one team is allowed to dominate over all the other teams. And I'm glad Mr. Hendrick sits up on his high horse, and Jeff Gordon has that old quirky Gordon smile that he has, and they're all just, you know, so ecstatic that they rip off the fans from having, you know, a decent show to pull for. That's great and fine and dandy, you know. I don't mean to be the sourpuss here, but, you know, it took Bristol being a race where tires couldn't last more than 30 laps for us to think that a short track race was actually a good race. And that just shows you where we're at right now with this next-gen car. If Xfinity and Trucks can race just fine at Martinsville, and it's the typical Martinsville, and then all of a sudden you put a product out there on the racetrack that can't nobody pass, it's a conveyor belt all the way around the whole track, well, damn it, let's put 60 cars out on the racetrack then so that we can get some kind of action going on. You know? I mean, it's unreal. I heard the perfect example today, Taz Taylor, on DBC. You can't – never is college more tougher than the pros, right? But right now in NASCAR racing, it is tougher to race an Xfinity car at a short track than it is to race on the Cup Series. There is something wrong there, sir.
Well, the thing with the short track racing we've had so far, Bristol was the tire fall off, which, of course, made things – entertaining for the fans. You had teams trying to figure out how do we manage to save tires, when do we put scuffs on this, that, blah, blah, blah. we go to Richmond and we had the weather package, which, either way, how can you sit there and say you have a wet weather package for short tracks when you're only half-assing it, but when it comes to road courses, you put in the full gig? I'm sorry, NASCAR missed the ball there. How do you have wet tires but no windshield wipers and no flaps to help you out? That is, you don't sit there and say you have the wet, give the wet weather package for the short tracks if you're only going to throw in rain tires. That's not it. You're being lazy. Get your crap together. But Richmond did become an entertaining race for the most part. There was a couple times where it got to be a little bit of a snoozer because you had Kyle Larson dominating at one point, and then when Truex got his rhythm, things got entertaining because you had a Larson versus Truex show, then Truex started running off with it, and then, of course, the final restart that everyone's making it to be this big old controversy and whatnot. Then we had Martinsville, and Martinsville missed the mark. So, and this is where NASCAR needs to come back and get feedback on drivers, teams, and do their own research of like, okay, what are we missing here? Obviously, Goodyear is going to try to fix the problem with the tire deal at Bristol, which I don't know why, but they're going to. And then Richmond, well, I don't know. I mean, you can say the wet weather pretty much saved the track. God only knows if we had a full dry track for the whole race, what we would have gotten. And then Martinsville is just a snoozer. Like, you can't, obviously NASCAR is not going to come up, with 20 different packages for each different track. That's the realistic point we're at here. NASCAR needs to figure out, let's go to all these short tracks, do all these testing. And I'm not saying they need to go out and test one car. No, they need a group of cars because obviously you're going to get more data and more information when you have more cars out on the track. If you need to throw five out on the track at once, go right ahead and throw five cars out in ones and see what you get. Something needs to change. What that is, I'm not entirely sure.
I mean, you know, after listening to our favorite shows this week, Door Bumper Clear, and of course, Mondays with Denny, that's actually detrimental. You know, Clint Bowyer made some suggestions. I thought that sounded really good about, raising the car a little bit, adding more horsepower, which I'm not completely for, because technically fans can't really tell. But now if it creates, you know, a harder car to drive, I'm all for it. And a smaller tire, basically, a more narrow tire. But, you know, as I've listened to both shows, you know, it's basically like it's the same song. We've known this car sucks at these racetracks for this is the third year now. And nothing's been done to change it, right? Nothing's been done to fix it. Though they say they're trying to fix it, are they really? Because honestly, when Denny Hamlin claims that, you know, those street tires, those rain weather tires, were the accidentally was the salvation to this problem, and then NASCAR just doesn't even want to look at that as an option. I don't see anything wrong with putting a treaded tire on a freaking race car. We've been doing it on dirt forever. If that's a tire that creates a fall off, I mean, what's the freaking point? Why do they have to be ball tires? If we could fix their problem by simply having tread on tires, put the freaking tread on the tires.
There are short tracks, at least there's a few up here in the Northeast. I don't know about the rest of the country, but there are short tracks that And these are local short tracks. They have local weekly divisions run on treaded tires, like Bethel Motor Speedway. They have, I mean, it's a little quarter-mile asphalt track that is literally surrounded by dirt racing country, no joke. And they run dirt classes on a pavement track besides your Legends cars and Bandoleros and your tour-style modifieds. Literally every class they have, besides those three I mentioned, run on a treaded tire. I mean, granted in the fact, yes, it helps teams that want to run, say, that track and a dirt track at the same time, but they're running, but there's other tracks that also run with a treaded tire, and the racing is pretty fine. It's nothing different. I don't know how many laps they can get in a NASCAR race with a stock car on treaded tires on a dry track, but you can't knock it until you try it, and you can't just sit on the wet weather stuff either.
Yeah, the other option was like what I think Denny Hamlin suggested, which was similar to Formula One. You know, Formula One has three different tires they can choose from. So, you know, I don't know why we continue to go in a circle, no pun intended, and not, you know, continue to do the same thing over and over again. I don't know if it's the diffuser. I don't know if it's the big tire. I don't know if it's Goodyear afraid that they got such a bad name from the beginning that they refused to do anything, and then they had the scare at Bristol. I mean, that shouldn't have been a scare. That should have been a, okay, I burnt the biscuits this time, but I'm going to sure know how to cook them next time, right? I mean, that's how you learn, right? The accidentals have really been the salvation to the sport because we've learned something from each time that they've made a mistake. Now, in the beginning, I believe that teams were pushing the envelope. These cars were slammed to the ground, and they didn't anticipate because, you know, everybody wants to say, well, AI and data and all this other stuff and predictive programs and stuff like that, you know, simulate programs and stuff. But why is it that every time we get a new car, there's a thousand things that the simulator didn't pick up on, including when they were running very low tire pressures, and the car was getting stuck to the ground. I mean, that's common sense, Taz Taylor. Of course the damn car is going to be stuck to the ground if they're hitting but 2 inches, not an inch, not even an inch of tire before the ground. And as soon as all the air is gone, basically those rims are on the ground. Of course, if you have four blowouts, the car is not going to go anywhere because you got damn axles going to be dragging on the ground. You know, but since AI didn't figure it out or predictive, you know, these predictive setup programs and stuff like that, since they didn't catch it, you know, they look like idiots out there. That's fine. We live and learn. We make mistakes. But we cannot go back to another damn short track and have this type of event. That Martinsville facility doesn't seat but 30,000 people, Taz Taylor. I don't think there was 10,000 people in the damn stands.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers for the Martinsville tickets and what the fan interaction was kind of like for the most part. I am curious of how the TV ratings are looking at for that. Oh, wait, right here. 2.191 million viewers for Sunday's race at Martinsville, nearly flat from 2.218 viewers last year. The race Chase Elliott returned from injury despite immense competition from the Women's Final Four Championship game, which got 18.7 million viewers. So a very slight decline. And the top five markets for Sunday's Cup race from Greensboro and Charlotte, North Carolina, West Palm Beach, Florida, Portland doesn't specify if it's Maine or Oregon, and then Hartford, Connecticut. And somebody made the comment of, why is NASCAR not hitting Connecticut for NASCAR races if nearly every week Connecticut is a top five market for viewership?
Right. Yeah, that is kind of an odd area, but, you know, I don't know. That is an odd area. It's almost everywhere. I guess there's a lot of Joey Logano fans, really. Joey Logano probably has a bigger imprint on
Logano,
racing than what
Kreese.
We get.
Brian Kreese
from
Connecticut,
that's
too.
Modified Country, Martin Truex. You know, these are all open-wheel modified background drivers, you know, that have raced in the small hills of Connecticut. And, you know, it is a big market. It's a thriving. And, you know, you got to have some money to live in Connecticut, man. They just don't have poor folks that live there. You know anybody poor that lives in Connecticut? I know I don't.
I don't know anybody that lives in Connecticut, really, so.
Touche. I don't know, Chad Taylor. I just, you know, last week we had Denny Hamlin jumping the start. I don't really think Richmond was that great of a race. You know, it was all right. Of course, we had some last lap drama. You know, we had last lap drama for this race, too, but it just didn't seem to work. And then Fox, of course, we could bitch all day about the podcast. I don't have a podcast to talk negative about the sport. I don't. It breaks my heart. Like, I mean, to be so pumped of what we had to talk about last week, to have to come on this week and explain to our fans why Hendrick Motorsports seems to dominate every time they go to Martinsville. I don't want to be insensitive here. I understand that there's a huge connection between what Rick Hendrick lost at Martinsville and what he'll ever gain. And I understand the sympathetic recourse, the continued support of Mr. Hendrick and his race team when they are at that racetrack. But it's really gotten to the point to where you might as well just sign the check and give it to one of those drivers because they seem to have it figured out. But in reality, when I hear Denny Hamlin talk and I hear these other comments that basically there is no technique anymore in racing Martinsville. Now it's just a whoever can hold it to the floor and whoever doesn't make a mistake. And that's, you know, we're not talking about passing, we're talking about shifting. Is that what I heard today? You know,
I think that's another thing that's killing it too. They're shifting from fifth gear to fourth gear and fourth gear to fifth gear. Why?
Because they're trying to get something out of the car. They're trying to get something, out of it to get around it. And, you know, I don't know. I think in the end.
Implement where other local short tracks do. Low gear, high gear. You start in low gear up until a certain RPM and then throw it in high gear. You leave it alone until you are going into the pits.
That's why I continue to say, Taz Taylor, this car was designed by a man who favored sports car racing over oval track racing. Look.
They need to grab...
By the end of the year, I'll be... Go ahead.
NASCAR needs to grab somebody who apparently knows what they're doing. And by what I mean by that is not only building cars, but having the idea of having what the car should be doing. I think there is one person that would perfectly suit that role for this next-gen car. Dissect it, research it, and I think that guy would be Ray Evernham. And you can't say I'm wrong because look what he did. SRX from the ground up to what it was before Don Haas took it over, and he made those cars run so beautifully that I would say most of the tracks that the series went to, the cars ran a very good freaking race. He made a car that was easy. I think how did he word it? I think it was easy to drive, but hard to drive fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ray Evernham, if he was in charge of the engineering program or whatever you want to call it, with these next-gen cars, I think we would have a monster of a good car.
Yeah. But any of the masterminds, Ray Evernham, good tech in the house. You know, Robin Pemberton used to have that role, and then Robin earned that role, something similar to what we're looking at now, to improve the car, and the Gen 6 car was the best car we've ever had. You know, I hate to say it, Taz Taylor, and I may be the only person that has that has the balls to even say this. I take Brian France back over this, over what we're going through right now, because it just seems like, and you know, Elton Sawyer comes out today on SiriusXM and says, "Hey, we're going to do something." Look, that's fine. You should have already done something. You know, obviously, you say you've been doing something this entire time, but we're continuously circling right back to the same problem.
Yeah, it's something needs to be done. I don't know what it is, if we need to pull a page out of the Formula One book and have different tire compounds, or putting something in the tire to at least have some tire wear involved, or maybe throwing something on the outside groove of Martinsville to, I guess, throw a second groove. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, they pay people a lot smarter than us, Taz Taylor, to figure this out. I don't want to spend the entire show complaining about NASCAR not putting together a good product, because all that does is create our product not to be any good. So let's shift gears for a minute. Let's bring a positive story. And this is where most people hang up on our show for sure. How about that damn Bubba Wallace?
He had one hell of a run. I am very impressed.
5 weeks in a row, top 10?
Oh, I don't know that far out, but
he's had
one heck of a season so far, I think, anyways.
Mm-hmm. Definitely been running up to the front. What do you think's happening here? I mean, Bubba's been running better than Tyler Reddick.
Something tells me maybe confidence in Bubba Wallace. And I'm not saying Reddick's lacking in confidence, and I don't think they're giving the short end of the stick to Tyler Reddick by any means necessary over in the garage area. I just think maybe Bubba Wallace has finally stopped playing the feel bad for me card or be hard on myself card and just pretty much put his big boy pants on and pretty much said, this is the confidence level I need. I need to stay this way, regardless of good or bad. And anything bad, we learn from it and rebound the next week. I think it's confidence level. That's what I'm believing.
You know, when we look at this team, they've been together for a while now. I think the longest tenure Bubba ever had in any other place was probably Richard Petty Motorsports. Very underfunded race team. Lacking, you know, those cars weren't even prepared in their shop, and they were prepared at RCR shop. We're finally getting the results, and he should be better than Tyler Reddick, right? Bubba Wallace should be better than Tyler Reddick. Bubba Wallace has been in cup racing longer than Tyler Reddick. It's just, you know, from the word go, I think everybody kind of wrote Bubba Wallace off, that this is, you know, a money grab, and You know, he didn't have the talent. But we've seen Bubba win, and we've seen him competitive. The Bubba that we've been dealing with for the last few years wasn't the same Bubba Wallace that come into the race in 2013, 2012, whatever year it was, when he finally started getting some recognition. The whole controversy thing is kind of what changed everybody's opinion about the guy. Now we're several years past that. And we're seeing results. We're seeing a kid who is putting forth his best effort behind the wheel each weekend. He knows his mistakes. I think anybody who can filter their – the problem with most society is nobody is willing to stop long enough to realize their mistakes in places. And they think that their poop doesn't stink and they want to blame it on somebody else. Well, you know, that's called accountability. And that's growth. Like, any time that you can be accountable for your own failures or your own mistakes, you're going to grow. Now, there are people who try to account for failure and mistakes, and they're reaching a little bit too far because they want to feel accepted or something to that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the ones who legitimately stop at the end of the day and say, you know what, that show sucked because here's where I messed up. And I need to fix that, and I need to make it better, and I need to be more prepared next time to make sure that I don't run into that problem again. That's what continues to, I feel like, happen to Darrell Wallace Jr. He's continuing to realize the mistakes that he's made, and he's making them better. Now, he also has quite the mentor, and you can be the big cock on the block or whatever, but look, let me tell you something. You ain't going to get more famous than Michael Jordan. So no matter where you go or what you do, when you are connected to Michael Jordan, you're just a shadow. And I think that in a way that kind of helps soothe Bubba, right? It kind of gives Bubba room to breathe, right? Because he's not the biggest man in the room. Now, if he were driving for, Penske or Roush or anybody like that, his presence and notoriety in the sport could probably be overwhelming to whoever is the owner of the company or whatnot. Because Bubba Wallace brings a lot of influence, but nobody, not even in the Cub garage, not in any baseball stadium, basketball stadium, football stadium, nowhere in the world can you bring the notoriety, the fame that Michael Jordan carries. And for him to be your boss, it probably on that level makes life a little bit easier. And maybe that's something that he's been open to and realized over the last couple of years. No matter how big you are, that man is way bigger. He's still the highest sneaker salesman in the world, and hasn't dribbled a basketball in 25 years, friend.
Oh, definitely, no doubt about that one.
All right.
You have this. Yeah, he's got the sponsorship dollars, but what other kind of money does the team kind of throw in? Like, are they throwing in? And I know they have JGR Alliance too, but how much is influenced by JGR at this point? I get at the start of it, I would say like what, the year one, year two. But sometimes new teams, they don't heavily rely on their alliances so much. I mean, they still rely on them, but not so heavily. So the question now we should start getting into is how much influence is JGR at this point into the 2311 camp? Is it like a 70% deal like it was day one that JGR is influenced, or has JGR backed off some like a 40 to 50% JGR impact?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just tied into TRD. And though there's information being shared throughout all of the Toyota teams, when Denny Hamlin leaves that team meeting at JGR and he goes and coordinates the team meeting at 2311, I do believe they're two different businesses. And that's what's so, you know, I guess, amazing about what Denny Hamlin's being able to do right now. And that's compartmentalize that when he's at JGR, he's the student. But when he's over at 2311 at Air Speed, he's the teacher or the boss. And, you know, I only can probably name you a few drivers that could possibly be able to juggle that type of responsibility. And I would have never guessed that Denny would be one, not over his past career. But, you know, of course, JGR has some influence, but I believe when Denny Hamlin went out to get or sign his own pit crews, I think that really told the tale about how he wanted to conduct business within 2311. Because you just think about it, Taz Taylor. If your pit crew is working for the boss, at any point in time, if that boss wants to come in and take one of your pit crew members, guess what? He can swap them out anytime he wants to, and nothing much you can do about it, right? So obviously, Denny felt that was a threat. And the first reason of business was, we got to fix this issue from happening, because this is what could happen. And I think that began the separation of Air Speed 2311 and JGR shop, you know. And I think that will continue to kind of separate themselves from each other, because, look, I think the last thing that 2311, they got to see a company that depended just a little bit too much on Joe Gibbs Racing. And who was that? Who was that team that we watched fail that had a championship, Taz Taylor? They won a championship,
Furniture
and 3 years later they're no longer – yeah, they're no longer even a team anymore, because they put too many eggs in the basket with JGR. I think Denny Hamlin and Michael Jordan went about it the other way.
I think Michael Jordan and Denny Hamlin had a lot of the financial backing for the most part. Granted, the fact they did start with one car, so that gave them props. They quickly jumped to two cars, faster than we probably expected. But being that they had two marketable drivers with two marketable owners, well, at least one marketable owner. We can go back and forth that Denny's EV is really marketable, but you have
now
Bubba Wallace again. Bubba Wallace marketable. When they brought in Kurt Busch, which, again, he was marketable. Some of his sponsors he had from Chip Ganassi came over with him. Monster Energy being a big one, came over with them, and he's an ambassador for Monster Energy, the brand.
Mm-hmm.
He also plays a big role in 2311, obviously, and in Toyota. He obviously brought in, I feel like he personally brought in Tyler Reddick. And when Kurt Busch stepped away for his concussion deal, and now that's led to a retirement, unfortunately, you brought in Ty Gibbs for keeping the car basically warm and running. And then you brought in a well-scouted talent of a driver in Tyler Reddick, who is a long-term, obviously is somebody you can keep on a long-term basis, being that he's a younger driver who can obviously learn a lot from guys like not only Denny, but Kurt Busch as well. Tyler Reddick, and pretty much you can say he's marketable, because with RCR, he had sponsorship without a problem. And going over to 2311, he has no problems of sponsorship at all for the most part. So, again, you have the marketable drivers. You have at least one marketable owner, arguably two, if you want to or go back and forth if Denny Hamlin's really marketable or not. But, I mean, it seems like
23. So it seems like that team entirely just had the financial backing. It was just more of a technical alliance. I think they just needed a real good solid starting point, and going with JGR, and obviously with Denny racing for JGR, I'm sure JGR was a heavy influence to start. At this point, do you think that they're as much of a heavy influence? Nah, I don't think so. I think a lot of what they have now is probably mostly at least 50 to 60% is probably just 2311 on their own.
I tell you, I don't know, buddy. I could sure use a Martinsville hot dog right about now.
Are you sure just
one? I bet that was the only thing good about the cup race. I mean, it's so hard. You know, I'm trying to grab some positivity somewhere, and, you know, between the Hendrick Motorsports stinking the show up and the car just not being that fun to watch. You know, and we raced two races at nighttime and then Martinsville in the daytime. I was really looking forward to hoping to have a Martinsville night race, but I'm glad we didn't give those fans, frostbite. I'm glad they did race in the daytime. But, Bubba Wallace being the positive story coming out of Martinsville, that's pretty tough there. That's pretty tough. That's all I can say.
I think there's a couple other driver shout outs we can give to, Joey Logano, after having an abysmal season to start, turned it around at Richmond and had another solid finish at Martinsville. Seems like maybe that team is starting to hit a rhythm. Alex Bowman pulling a top 10 finish. I mean, I know Alex Bowman, he coming off an injury last year was like basically a shot in the dark when he came back. But it seems like this year he's like the silent, quiet driver. He finished eighth, and currently right now, believe it or not, Alex Bowman just peaks into the top 10 in points. So I feel like if there is a driver that needs some spotlight that hasn't been, it would be Alex Bowman. And I know we said we don't want the Hendrick Motorsports spoiler, but you can't ignore the Alex Bowman crew over there. And also Ryan Preece with a ninth place finish too.
Yeah. Look, you know, the usual suspects is what makes it boring, right? If Alex Bowman had won the race, I think I probably would have had a different, first of all, I picked William Byron to win the cup race. That's how confident I was that Hendrick Motorsports was going to come in and sweep the damn weekend, you know, because, I mean, I literally picked the guy who won, you know. I knew what we were going to have there. It didn't surprise me any. I shouldn't be upset about it today. But, you know, it is what it is. As for Joey Logano, he's headed, you know, they seem to be headed on the right path. You said the SHR cars, I think two of those cars wound up in the top ten. It was Priest, and who was the other one? Was it Briscoe?
Briscoe.
You know, there's a subject about them that, you know, is questionable in our minds right now, whether or not they're going to be a two-car, three-car, or four-car team next year, SHR. And if they are a two-car team and two cars are for sale, what two drivers are going to come back and what two drivers are going to be let go, you know, at Stewart Haas Racing? And, you know, you would think that Chase Briscoe is probably one that definitely would not be in trouble, but the second one, you know, you have to choose whether or not it be Barry, Gregson, or Priest. And, you know, that's just a hard choice. You know, two good drivers are going to wind up somewhere else.
And other driver spotlights, they didn't have top 10 finishes, but they had top 15s, and that's Eric Jones and Todd Gilliland.
You know, Todd has shown quite the promise this year in that 38 car. And it seemed like since, you know, last year when they basically kicked Todd Gilliland out of the race car to race Zane Smith in it for a couple of races, that really just lit a fire under Gillian's ass. And, you know, quietly, this guy has put together some solid finishes, man. I mean, to be, I guess a tier one back burner. I don't know, you know, they're calling themselves tier one teams over there with the alliance with Penske. But, you know, definitely tier one means that there should be, superstar driver there. Michael McDowell nor Todd Gillian quite fit the grade to be a superstar driver, Todd's put together a decent season this year and really turned some heads. I mean, I've been impressed. We could probably
win
maybe out of New Hampshire or Talladega or somewhere like that. Speaking of Talladega, next week, baby.
we got to go through the everything is bigger in Texas and grab the bull by the horns, and then we go off to the wild side of the Talladega High Banks.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I went and bought me a camper Sunday, so we're going to go up there in a style, in a pop-up camper. We're going to do it the old school way. Looking forward to being in Talladega. So, you know, let's talk real quick about the Xfinity race. Of course, Eric Amarola, you know, reunion back at Joe Gibbs Racing. You know, of course, a lot of people don't realize that Eric Amarola was a DEI driver. He kind of got a bad end of the deal at DEI, but I believe he started out as a Joe Gibbs driver. Maybe that's backwards. I'm not sure. But I know one time Eric Amarola was pulled out of a car that he was leading a race in for Denny Hamlin to get behind the wheel and take the win. And so Eric Amarola is credited with a win in the Xfinity Series. That was actually Denny Hamlin that crossed the finish line. That's kind of the story of Eric Amarola's career. He wound up at Richard Petty Motorsports, but found a little bit of success over there at SHR. Well, decided to retire last year at the end of this past season and took a part-time deal.
From full-time. Over.
Yeah, yeah. Signed the deal to be back at JTR. Are you surprised that, he goes out there and does his thing at Martinsville?
All right, so let's go. So this is a reunion for Amarola and Joe Gibbs because I had to look back in his profile. So back in 2006, Amarola drove the 75 Spears Manufacturing Chevy for Spears Motorsports in the Craftsman Truck Series as part of the JGR development program, started every race and had three top 10 finishes, including a best finish of 9th, ending the season 18th. That same season, he also drove 9 races in the Busch in what was called the Busch Series then for Joe Gibbs in the 19 car. His best finish was 11th at Dover. He also served as a test driver for Gibbs teammates Yaley and Hamlin when their Nextel Cup and Busch Series schedules conflicted. He scored his first career pole at the Milwaukee Mile, qualifying the number 20 car for Hamlin, who competed in the race. He moved up to the Busch Series for JGR in 2007, driving both the 18 and the number 20 Chevys for Gibbs. He drove in each car for 10 races apiece. At his second career pole at Daytona, won the pole again for the second straight year at the Milwaukee Mile. And then it looks like at the end of 2000, 7 is where the falling out began of Almirola and GGR, and the Almirola DEI era begun.
What year was that? 2007? 2008?
Yeah, 2007, 2008 was basically where Almirola and GGR had a falling out, and Almirola found a home in DEI.
And I believe he shared a ride with none other than Mark Martin. And Mark Martin's part-time schedule at DEI. So, yeah, I mean, you know, now here he is, full circle, back at JGR. Do you think that maybe Eric Almirola quietly believed that he wasn't really done with cup racing, but he knew that he needed to get out of the situation that he was in at SHR, took this part-time gig at Joe Gibbs Racing, knowing that Joe Gibbs probably will be replacing two of their drivers within the next couple of seasons, and a chance maybe to go back into the Cup Series seat?
See, I don't know, because I feel like Eric Almirola, in a way, I see what you're saying. He probably saw or maybe felt forced out of the Cup Series. He probably could have tried to find a ride, but knowing that in the Cup Series, if you are not the top guy as a veteran, you're not going to get signed real easy, and it's going
right.
to be tougher on you. So
right.
I think – so I kind of feel like, and you have to go younger in the sense with the Cup Series at this point in the game. So I feel like he was kind of seeing that and probably feeling forced. So I kind of see where you were going with that. But I think with Almirola, I believe he could probably go – and I hate to say it this way, and I don't mean it in a bad way. He probably could go the AJ Allmendinger route. And I get that Allmendinger went Cup Series full-time to kind of, you know, reboot himself. But I think Allmendinger staying in the Xfinity Series full-time just to, you know, keep himself in the competitive – the competition, top running guy, and I think Almirola could probably fall in the same suit if he wanted to go back full-time racing. He probably has a spot with Joe Gibbs.
So you think he could pull Elliott Sadler?
Oh, yeah, he probably could. I wouldn't be surprised if he did.
Right, with the right opportunity. Well, there's no better opportunity than being in that 20 car over there at Joe Gibbs Racing. I know that. That's a car with a storied career there, with a storied background for sure.
There's a Joe Gibbs driver. Actually, there's two drivers I believe that deserve. All right, I'll give three. There are three drivers in the Xfinity Series that deserve shout-outs. Obviously, Eric Almirola got his, but that's not the one I'm eyeballing. The first one I'm going to eyeball is the driver who finished third out of the JGR camp as well, and that's Chandler Smith, who started 37th and climbed his way up to third. And then you have the fourth-place finisher of the Junior Motorsports camp, Carson Quaffle, and I don't know. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that is Carson's Xfinity Series debut.
It was his debut, yes.
And he finished in the fourth spot. And the other driver I wanted to highlight is out of the college camp, finished starting 23rd, found his way into the top 10, finishing 10th, is Josh Williams.
Oh, Josh Williams. Oh, good job, Josh. Heck yeah.
That's way to go, man.
I think his Cup Series stuff's not going too well. But it's good to see him with a solid finish in the Xfinity Series.
I feel like colleague. I think colleague needs to back out a bit in the Cup Series. I'm not saying colleague leave the Cup Series fully. I think they need to downgrade their shop. And maybe field one car. Pull the JTG move.
Yeah, give Dale Jr. a chance to come in and bring in his management team and make those cars better, you know? I really feel like there's going to be somewhere where, you know, this is going to have to break open. And Dale Jr. is going to make that move, whether it's buying a couple of charters or merge into a team that already has charters. Stuart Earnhardt sounds pretty good. Colleague Earnhardt sounds pretty good. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be Junior Motorsports. It can be any name that they want it to be. But I do believe that there's definitely a hole there that's going to be filled pretty soon. It's just a matter of what team or when they you know, pull the trigger to make that happen. Austin Hill, I feel like, probably deserves a Cup ride. Does Kyle Busch, I think this is his second out of 3-year deal. Does he start negotiating, a contract extension with Richard Childress Racing? Is this how we're going to see Kyle Busch sail off into the sunset? Where do we stand right now with Kyle freaking Busch? Because one thing about it, we ain't talking about him very much.
A big miss over at Kyle Busch in RCR. Is he carrying where the team is currently sitting right now? Oh, God, yes. I mean, he's doing double the work than Austin Dillon is over there. I think, in my personal opinion, if I were RCR, I would sit here and look at the mirror of, look at last year, look where we are so far this year. Yes, Kyle Busch is off to a struggling start, but how can we make Kyle Busch and the team better? So that Kyle Busch is not falling off the end of the career. Because, I mean, look at last year. Kyle Busch pulled off, what, a three, four win year?
Yeah, three wins last year. Yeah.
And this year, he's, like, not even there, and a lot of it could be the pit crew deal. So, And Kyle Busch has openly admitted saying, well, it's not all the pit crew. I have made some mistakes before, and he has said, if we can fix the stupid mistakes in pit road, we can fix the stupid mistakes in the driver end, I think we would be back to where we were last year, if not better, which a lot of that I could agree with. I'm sure you could agree with that too, Chris.
Right.
But again, back to what I was saying, with RCR, I think if they look themselves in the mirror, they have to look at Austin Dillon, because there is no way that Austin Dillon has been in the Cup Series for this long in the same equipment, in the same car, and has not even competed to the levels of where Kyle Busch and Tyler Reddick have been in the last few years.
Right. Yeah, it's 6 wins in between the two drivers.
You have to look at the realization of Austin Dillon needs to get out, and maybe RCR can feel the next. Maybe RCR can knock Austin Dillon down and put Austin Hill up and see if maybe the trading switch could be a factor.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, look what Cole Custer did.
Look what Cole Custer did.
He went from Xfinity to Cup, and a lot of people were like, this was probably the better deal, and Tony Stewart looked at it as, some people thought Tony Stewart was kind of dumb for putting Custer down and Ryan Preece up, but I don't think people realize with Ryan Preece, he struggled to start because he didn't have nowhere near as much seat time in a couple of years.
Oh, for sure.
Than somebody like Cole Custer. And Cole Custer was struggling in that SHR 41 car that Kurt Busch was actually being relevant in that same car and same equipment. So Custer moving down, and it benefited it to his advantage last year, obviously, with him winning a Xfinity championship. I think maybe RCR needs to look in the mirror and say, stop playing this family game of giving Austin Dillon the silver spoon and racing in the Cup Series, because obviously he's not producing much of anything. And knock him down in the Xfinity Series. See if he's, competitive there and improve and put Austin Hill in the 3 car in the Cup Series. And if along the lines Austin Dillon, remains competitive and is a top guy in the Xfinity Series while Kyle Busch finishes out his career, then move Austin Dillon back up and take over Kyle Busch's ride.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Kyle Busch is sitting 16th in points right now, Taz Taylor. I believe that Kyle Busch is a top 5 caliber driver. Sitting 16th in points, there's definitely something wrong. Of course, Joey Logano is pretty far down in the points as well. It doesn't mean that his career is over with. It means that things aren't clicking right. And that's what's going on with Kyle Busch right now. Now, the one thing that I'm most interested in is normally, typically, when Kyle Busch runs pretty crappy, we get a ton of radioactive from his, basically in-car tantrums. Are we not getting that now? Is the press not covering it? Taz, has there been, are they covering it up? Like, because it's generally when Kyle doesn't run good, he has great radioactive moments. But I haven't seen those extorted the way that they were when he was at JGR. Has he calmed down in the race car? Is he not, maybe he's intimidated by Richard Childress and doesn't cuss out his crew and therefore doesn't get the best out of them? What's going on inside that car, Taz?
I don't know, and it makes me think the same thing too, because when he was on the Pat McAfee show a few weeks ago, Pat McAfee gave him the hard-hitting question of, are you still the same Kyle Busch that you were 5-10 years ago of, you say what you feel, you wear your heart on your sleeve, you race hard, you bump people all the way, you give them the tough love, just that. And Kyle Busch openly admitted, said, yep, I'm still the same guy. I've not changed one bit. And something tells me that something has changed and he's not openly admitting saying that. So maybe the Childress intimidation factor is there. But if the Childress intimidation factor is there, then maybe Childress isn't seeing the true Dale Earnhardt in Kyle Busch's eyes that he has given praise for.
Right, right. And, of course, Richard Childress may want, I think in marriage, it's
you know, if somebody wants the marriage to work, whether or not it does, is, you know, up to both parties, not just one. And I feel like that could be the situation where Childress wants to have a happy marriage and ending with Kyle Busch. But if I'm Kyle Busch right now and I've got the opportunity to go maybe at Penske or somewhere else and get a better, you know, a better deal, a better ride, even if it's going to Legacy and getting back partnered with my Toyota people. Or God forbid, what if he drove for Denny Hamlin, right? What if he drove for 2311? There's connections there, right? I mean, and look, if Denny were to leave, I mean, how about that? How about that awkward move, right? If Denny Hamlin announced that Kyle Busch is coming to drive for him. You know, there's a lot of those possibilities, and I'm just not, I am not sold that Kyle Busch isn't holding his attitude back, holding what he says back, so that he can make a move to get out of a bad situation. You know, a lot of times when people become quiet, it's not because they become content. It's because they're really building a plan, a get-the-hell-out-of-here plan. And I just wonder if maybe Kyle Busch isn't, you know, quietly knowing that I can't have outbursts. I can't look like I'm not against the team. I can't come out here and badmouth, because in reality, that hurts me being able to get a ride with a top-notch team. If I'm Denny Hamlin and I know that I'm expanding to four cars and I've already got a connection with Kurt Busch, and there's already a connection with Monster Energy, who has, once again, has put money into the Bush's pockets before. Man, I mean, I'm looking at that, right? You know, and I'm probably figuring the moment I announce that, that'll probably be the end of my career over at Joe Gibbs Racing, because, well, if I can find sponsorship for Kyle Busch, why the hell couldn't Joe Gibbs Racing find sponsorship? But there again, you know, I'm really just filling a time slot, but I wonder what you think about my theory that he may be just staying quiet, because right now is probably when he would be negotiating a contract for his 2026 season, which would be after the expiration of the Richard Childress Racing contract. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that that could be a possibility?
I think the possibility of Kyle getting a contract extension with RCR is more than likely happening. But I think probably in the back of his mind, he's probably got the deal of maybe I might get let go for Austin Hill. But if I were Kyle Busch,
you don't think
I wouldn't worry so much
about.
I don't think if I were Kyle Busch, I would not worry about possibly, you know, getting chopped out of RCR entirely. Because if you remember at one point when Kyle Busch was signed to RCR back in 2022 at the end of that year?
Right.
RC Childress openly admitted saying that they had plans to field a third car, and they were working on the process of making that third car a chartered team. So is Childress thinking about maybe expanding to a three-car team for real? And if they get this charter, where would they get it from? My guess would probably be Kolleg at this point.
Right. Or Stuart Haas. So, I mean, I see what you're saying. Expansion by Richard Childress. Three teams would have better resources than two. But that still leaves the void of whether or not if, you know, you got Kyle Busch who went to private school his whole life and for the best two organizations in NASCAR, the Hendrick organization and then JGR. And now he's over at the City Public School where the bathrooms are run down, the lockers are dented, and the teachers don't comb their hair before class. That may make Kyle Busch feel a little out of place. Do I need to sell it any more to you, Tessa? But I believe deep in my heart, Kyle Busch actually hates showing up to work every single day because
It's honestly not as nice of a building as it was as the other building he got fired from, the two other buildings he basically got fired from.
I don't know. I mean, if you really think, in a way you can think about, he might be on the chopping block, because it seems weird that when he was with Gibbs, he had his own truck team, was doing fine, and ever since the move from Gibbs and Toyota to RCR and Chevy, he had 1 year of the truck team and then poof, gone, just out of nowhere.
Right.
But the question remains, though, what is Chevy and RCR not as marketable as we thought? Or is Kyle Busch himself not as marketable as we all thought?
Right. But let's go back to the parody of this car. 3 years ago, we had, almost 20 different winners. I think last year we had 16 different winners or something to that effect. But now
I think we were at 12 or 13 last year.
Right. So we're 4-7. We're 8 races down the road in this Cup season, and we've only had 3 teams that have wins. Two of those teams have multiple wins, and that's JGR and Hendrick. The only other team that has a win right now is Trackhouse. So the parity is no longer, right? I feel like in the beginning, the first 2 years of this car, Richard Childress showed up to certain racetracks and was fast. But now what it looks like is Hendrick Motorsports has caught up with everybody and has learned how to kick everybody's tail. And now, you know, basically, if you're not driving for Hendrick, you're not driving for Joe Gibbs, you're just going to be getting the cookie crumbles of what's left. And, you know, that would be concerning, as I said, with, Kyle Busch, being that, you know, knowing that your team is not, you know, you're not getting the same rapport your other Chevrolet partners are getting, right? If Hendrick's doing so well, why isn't that information being shared amongst the other Chevy camps? You know, I thought Chevy, you know, took care of both those teams. I thought they were both on the same playing field. Obviously, they're not. And Childress, like I said, had an advantage, and Tyler Reddick was there in that period of the advantage and got him a win. I don't believe he won at all until he was in the Gen 7 now car. So Tyler Reddick raced for
Kyle Busch has said on the Pat McAfee show, because they were wondering if information gets passed along, or do you guys try to, you know, try to play the sneaky kid in school type who was trying to get out of class in the snap part or whatever. But Kyle Busch said that there are some weeks, depending on what track they're at, where teams within the same manufacturer do share information, and there are weeks where teams don't share anything, and they have to be the sneaky kid trying to get out of class and see what, or be the sneaky kid to cheat on a test to see what somebody else is doing and how their setup is and things like that. So it's pretty much playing the, in a way, with how this car is, you're playing a chess game. Like here's some of the information to do better, but we're not going to give you all the tools about it.
Yeah, and I think that some of that information won't ever be trickled down to these other teams unless they buy the employees that have helped manufacture those ideas or have been a part of them. So to this day, there's things that Chad Knauss did to race cars that are just a myth, and I can't wait to read the book later on and find out exactly just how much he was cheating. As it's admitted now, the T-Race car by Ray Evernham was the most cheated-up race car that's ever been built.
that's been admitted. One day we'll find out about Jimmy Johnson and Chad Knaus the same way. Obviously Hendrick puts the resource in, he does the homework, he gets the data, and he gets things figured out. William Byron just didn't turn into a superstar overnight. We knew William Byron was capable of being a superstar. Did we know that, did a lot of people think that it was probably more on the verge of just being a star? No, he's so damn good that Chase Elliott, as I predicted last year, maybe even the year before, he's the third best driver at Hendrick Motorsports. And it's to the point now where I've seen and watched Chase Elliott now enough times to know that he no longer believes he's the best at Hendrick Motorsports, which could create even more issues down the road. It could either one, it could, you know, he could understand his place similar to the way Dale Earnhardt did, and Casey Kane, I guess, or he could rebel against it and try to go somewhere and maybe wind up in a Penske ride or maybe JGR. That could happen down the road. But Kyle Busch is the guy that we were talking about here for this length of a period of time because, I think we're waiting to see the meltdown. And honestly, I figured the meltdown would have already happened, I believe, last year. I predicted if he didn't win, or maybe the win would come too early. And then the win did come early, but then he got two more wins as well. So now it's been almost a year since those wins. And this is the point in time where a driver really – I mean, you see how aggravated Martin Truex Jr. is. That guy was leading the points, right? But couldn't seem to get the deal done and get into victory lane, and so he's frustrated. Kyle Busch has got to be getting frustrated about where he is and where his race team is in the Cup Series right now. There's just no way you can turn that competitiveness off. And if he's lost the drive that made him Kyle Busch, then one, he either needs to get the hell out of Dodge, out of that race car, or just retire from racing altogether because this Kyle Busch is not fun. This Kyle Busch creates zero headlines. This Kyle Busch is boring. Can't say anything more to that. Taz Taylor, what else do you have? Anything else on the plate?
I don't think so, other than our hot picks to close it out.
Yeah. Well, we're going to Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas. Of course, we're going to be bumping the Beyonce album while we're out there. Anybody?
Oh, geez.
This ain't Texas. Huh? Huh? What's wrong?
Oh,
you don't like that? Huh? It's number one album in country music right now. She's going to be on stage next year with Jelly Roll presenting her the album of the year. Watch. Coming to CMA Awards near you. And how about Morgan Wallen? He let the tequila talk, didn't he?
Hey, he's only quitting one chair at a time.
Man, that's my look, man. That is my look. First, he gets caught saying a bad word. Right? He gets caught saying a Kyle Larson. And then the dude gets belligerent drunk, throws a couple of chairs off of a fellow country music singer's bar rooftop there in Nashville, and the chairs happen to almost hit two cops. Oh, my gosh. I mean, just think, man. My goodness gracious. Anyway, so let's get into Taz's hot picks. We're going to Texas.
All right, so for Texas, for the favorites I have listed to start our list, we have none other than, of course, William Byron, Denny Hamlin, and Tyler Reddick. For contenders, I have Kyle Busch, Christopher Bell, and Martin Truex Jr. For the underdogs, I have Chase Briscoe, Eric Jones, and Chris's amigo, Daniel Suarez.
Mi amigo!
Of course, there are a lot of names out there that easily could be put on this list somewhere. And we're going to break down where we believe can sit in that part.
without further ado, let's get into it.
Well, one flaw that I see on this entire list, and I don't know if you just think Hendrick's going to lay down next week, but I only see one Hendrick driver, and it's William Byron on this list. And I believe that the stats will show you Kyle Larson's been pretty successful at Texas, as has Chase Elliott, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure Chase Elliott got a win there, but I know he's been successful at Texas.
No.
Alex Bowman, no wins.
So Chase Elliott, believe it or not, has a better average finish than Kyle Larson at this track. For Chase Elliott in 13 races has 2 top 5s, 6 top 10s, has only led 89 laps for an average finish of 13.1. Kyle Larson, on the other hand, however, does have the 1 win in 16 races, 4 top 5s, 6 top 10s. He has led an obscene amount of laps of 448 laps. His average finish, however, could say otherwise, and that's an 18.6. So there is some Hendrick love that we could show on this one.
Right.
We could put Kyle Larson as a favorite, being that it is a mile and a half track, and we know Kyle Larson does Kyle Larson things on these mile and a halves. Chase Elliott looking for that first Texas win. Yes, he has a better average finish than Larson, but if you look at the number of top fives versus the number of laps led, Kyle Larson dominates Chase Elliott any day. So if we're going to put more than William Byron on this list and we're looking at Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson, I can easily see Larson as a favorite and Chase Elliott as a contender.
I like that idea. I'll quickly think about our last season's Cup champion, Ryan Blaney. I noticed that he's not on this list. What is Ryan Blaney's stats look like there, Taz Taylor?
Ryan Blaney winless at Texas on the points race side. He does have a Texas win in the All-Star race.
I thought I seen him with a six-shooter somewhere.
15 races, 4 top 5s, 8 top 10s, has led for 432 laps. The only question mark right now is his average start to average finish ratio, which is a 9.9 start and a 16.3 finish.
It sounds like he might be a contender, Taz Taylor.
I could not agree anymore. Now, let's look at his – let's stay in the Penske camp. Let's stay in the Ford camp. Let's go to somebody who I think is riding on a good momentum turnaround in the last two races. That's Joey Logano, and he could go as a favorite on this one here, Chris, believe it or not. He has finished at least 50% of his Texas starts in the top 10, and that is Joey Logano looking at in 28 races. He does have only 1 win, unfortunately, but he's nearly finishing 50% in the top 5 with 12 top 5s. And as I mentioned earlier, he's finishing at least 50% of his races in the top 10 with 15 top 10s, has led 480 laps, and his average start to average finish ratio is almost a near mirror image.
Where would you set him at there, Taz?
I could see him as a favorite. And we all know with this next-gen car, if we know anything of how drivers are, it's that if you have the momentum, you're going to keep it going until you hit the dead-end freight train. Because, I mean, look at William Byron so far this year. If you look at last year, Chris Buescher, when he was on the 3-win race deal, he carried a lot of momentum with him throughout the playoffs. When you look at Ryan Blaney last year, when he was basically in a must-win situation at Martinsville, he won at Martinsville, and that momentum carried him over through to Phoenix and obviously won the championship. Joey Logano has had back-to-back solid top 10 finishes, and he could carry that momentum right with him.
Yeah. Is there a reason why Chastain is being left off this list? Does he not have the stats to back up something solid?
No, one top five, one top ten has only led two laps in seven Texas races. His average finish is a 21.9.
I think he's a good dark horse. I think Chastain is a good dark horse. I'm not giving you my pick right now, but I believe Chastain may be a dark horse to that. I would feel much more comfortable putting Chastain. It's more like I told you so. Can we put him as an underdog?
He truly can, being that that's the only category we have left to fill.
Well, look at there. Just look at that. Would you look at that?
Now, I'm going to list off my underdogs and reasons why. Chase Briscoe, the reason why he's on the underdog list, an easy underdog right there. Three Texas races, has only missed the top 10 once, and currently holds the best average finish of all active cup drivers. And if you look at his average start to average finish, what a jump that is. He knows how to find his way towards the front. His average start is a 29.0. His average finish, again, the best of all active cup drivers right now, is a 10.0.
Wow.
Eric Jones is on the underdog list. He currently holds the third best active cup driver, or the third best average finish for active cup drivers. In 12 races, he has three top fives, seven top tens, which means he has finished outside the top 10 five times. He has actually led 116 laps at Texas. His average start is a 16.0 and average finish of 11.8. So, again, he finds his way towards the front. Daniel Suarez.
Can you check Eric Jones' stats real quick in the Xfinity Series, just real quick? Does he have a win there at Texas? Let me check that for you. Go ahead, Cash. I'm going to check that for you.
All right. Daniel Suarez, Chris's amigo. In 11 races at Texas, he has two top fives, four top tens. He has led for 35 laps, and his average start is a 15.8 with an average finish of 16.0. So it seems like he's hitting the consistent mark from start to finish. It may not be as impressive as Briscoe or Eric Jones that I have just listed off, but it's not a drastic improvement, but it's not a drastic fall off. He does what he does best, sitting comfortably where he can best run.
Yeah. Can I tell you something real quick, Taz Taylor? Eric Jones swept the Xfinity Series wins at Texas in 2017. He won both the spring race and the fall race. And I'm going to tell you the reason why I can remember this, Taz Taylor. And it's very funny because it's an iconic picture that's always taken when these guys win at Texas. And that's the cowboy hats and the six shooters. And I remembered seeing Eric Jones in a cowboy hat with two six shooters in his hand. So just that's how something so simple can be so iconic in our memories, right? That I literally remembered Eric Jones. So Eric Jones has had a lot of success here at Texas Motor Speedway. very good call out for that one being an underdog there, Taz. That's doing your homework. I think a little bit of luck was in that, but also that's doing your homework.
Well, hey, stats don't lie either.
No, stats don't lie. And this guy's been fast here before. So, legacy is not the leftovers of Richard Petty Motorsports anymore.
No, they're finding their groove, because ever since letting go of Ty Dillon, well, Noah Gregson and Ty Dillon, nothing against Gregson, let's put it that way.
He's doing good at Tour, huh?
And making the switch from Chevy to Toyota, and they grabbed John Hunter Nemechek. It seems like Legacy has found the spark of a turnaround. And I've expected them to be somewhat competitive, but I didn't expect them to be like how they are right now.
Right. Can I give you one more little tidbit about Eric Jones?
Go right ahead.
He got his first win at Texas Motor Speedway in 2015. So he's won three career races at Texas. The plot thickens. Oh, man. Wow. Good job, man. That's good. I love finding little tidbit stats like that. It makes me remember our old buddy Mike Perricone, who we called Stats. He was well known for digging deep and getting that type of stuff that most people wouldn't dig that far into. But if I had DraftKings this week, which the state of Mississippi doesn't allow us to gamble unless we're at the casino, I would definitely have Eric Jones on my chart as a possible black horse, or what's it called, dark horse pick rolling into Texas, man. Suarez, I think that was a good pick there as well. Trackhouse, I feel like they'll probably have something here at Texas that seems to fit their quota, these mile-and-a-half speedways. Will Texas run similar to Atlanta? I have a feeling like somehow or another Texas is the next Atlanta, and the type of setups and stuff that they're running at Texas could possibly be carried – I mean, at Atlanta could very well be carried over to a scale such as Texas.
I don't think Texas will be the mirror image of Atlanta. I don't believe we will see the true super speedway type of racing that we get through Atlanta now. Do I think drafting will play a factor? Yeah, I could see it. But to a full extent of Atlanta, no. Do I think it'll be... I do believe it will be a decent race. I think the last time the Cup Series ran here at Texas, I think it put on a decent product. Was it the best? No, but it wasn't one that you could snooze through and you'd be upset and you missed anything.
Okay. All right. Well, show, race fans. Okay, go ahead.
We have one more underdog to fill in, and there is one driver we have not mentioned who has won here.
Has he made this
Texas.
List?
He has made this. He has made our list before. He can be the true definition of an underdog. He has won at Texas.
He doesn't have a pacifier in his mouth, does he?
What's that?
I said he doesn't have a pacifier in his mouth, does he?
Oh, no, we're not talking about Gibby.
Well, we must be talking about Bubba Wallace then.
Oh, no, 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 no.
No, 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 no. No Gibby, no Bubba Wallace. Who then, Taz Taylor? Who's the underdog?
Yeah. Oh, no, you're going to make me say it.
Don't say Rhinestone Cowboy.
Oh, yes.
No, no. He is not allowed on this list at all. No. No. I refuse. I refuse. There's no way. I mean, Christopher Bell is not on this list. Alex Bowman
is
not on this list. Brad Keselowski. Brad Keselowski is not on this list. Do not. Under no means. Okay. But Brad Keselowski's not. And I believe Chris Buescher won a race here last year, didn't he?
No. Chris Buescher hasn't even recorded a top 10 at this track.
Ah, that's you doing your homework. You're good. All right.
You know what? Throw Alex
Bowman
in there.
Why is Jimmy Johnson on this list? Why is Jimmy Johnson on this list? Is Jimmy Johnson racing?
He is, but you know what? I'm calling on his number 48 follow-up. Alex Bowman deserves the underdog.
Oh, all right. We got to make sure if we kiss as much Hendrick ass as Fox did this past weekend. So let's just add him to the list.
I am a Jimmy Johnson fan, but I'm gonna be in realization. He'll be lucky if he scores a top 20 finish.
Kyle Busch.
He's a contender, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I see it. Never mind. I'm sorry. I was just looking through the odds. Yeah. All right. So Alex Bowman, underdog. Give me the stats of Alex Bowman.
All right. Alex Bowman, 14 races, 2 top fives, 2 top tens. He has led 58 laps, 19.4 start, averaging in a 23.9 average finish.
He fits the underdog criteria.
He has led laps. He does have top fives and top tens. So I believe he fits the criteria. I mean, shoot, he's got more top fives than Rhinestone Cowboy, who has a win at this damn track, and I don't even know how he managed it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, he's got his crew chief back to help get him that win there. So I'll give that to Austin Dillon. But definitely Alex Bowman over Austin Dillon. There's no way. No way. I'll take Alex Bowman any day. I just can't stand to have his name on our list.
I think Chris is going to start filing a petition to make sure Austin Dillon never makes our list ever again for the rest of the year.
No. As a matter of fact, I don't even want to see his face in NASCAR anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, Austin, you know, it's just, you're stinking the show up, man. You're stinking the show up. Go to the Xfinity Series where you could. Yeah, you suck. You look, the Xfinity Series is going to have quite a few good drivers down in their racing in their level soon here, and I believe that's what we're headed to with, like, Eric Camarola and several of these other drivers going to step down. Look at the success Cole Custer's had doing it, right? Don't get me off the rails. It's time to go.
All righty.
Hell no to Austin Dillon. Hell no. Austin Hill is in this race this weekend, along with Jimmy Johnson. So that's two open cars. I wonder why they chose Texas. Is Texas a wild card
probably
race?
So Jimmy Johnson could give himself some hope in running in NASCAR, just by running an oval.
Yeah. Well, I hope Jimmy has a good run. I really do. I want to see him. He's ran a handful of races already, and I haven't seen any good race that he's been able to put together. Most of them he's gotten wrecked out of.
So I just want to see Jimmy put together a decent race, maybe a top five, top ten finish. That would be great.
Oh, that would be a win if he did that.
I believe so, for sure. All right, Taz, Taylor, we went a few minutes over. Let's get the hell out of here so we can go home.
All right, well, thank everyone for listening along to Race Chat Live here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio, for letting us, you know, go back to our regular scheduled program on Tuesday nights. Anyways, we wanted to – if you want to listen to our show, if you ever miss us live, go to Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts. You name it, we are more than likely on it. Just search the 110 Nation. You'll find our shows that happen live on Tuesday nights. You can listen to them at any time you like. You can also listen to shows such as the 110 Nation Sports Show that airs on Wednesday nights. And also Jared's Return of Safety to Success shows that airs on Thursday nights live. You can also listen to those as well. Be sure to follow our Facebook pages, Race Chat Live and the 110 Nation Sports, for updated content in terms of racing, sports-related, news and whatnot. You can also check out the YouTube page on the 110 Nation YouTube page. And, of course, don't forget to send in those picks tomorrow and Thursday. If you don't get them in tomorrow, we are seeing a big turnaround from some people. We're now into, it looked like it was going to be a landslide at one point. Now we're seeing five people battling for the same real estate. Seems to be more competitive this year than we probably expected, on day one probably. So get those picks in, and we'll see you guys same bat time, same bat place next Tuesday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central. This has been Race Chat Live with the Caution Flag of Racing Radio, Chris Crane. I'm the Tasmanian Devil Flaggers, Taz Taylor, saying good night. We'll see y'all next week.
Hey, everybody.